Hi, welcome to
Urban Planning is Not Boring. I'm Sam.
And I'm Nat.
Hello everyone, and we have with us right now a very special guest from APA California, the state chapter. We have the APA California president, Andrea Aus, and we are just gonna have her share some opening remarks for the conference and announce anything that she wants about the Inland Empire and it being here and share any thoughts. So yeah.
Thank you so much. Well, it's a joy to be invited to participate in this. We were completely excited that Cultivating Our Future, our conference, was going to be in Riverside this year in the Inland Empire and representing. It was originally scheduled to be here in 2020. Mm-hmm. You may or may not know that. So because of obvious reasons, like a pandemic, it was put on pause for a number of years. However, what that did do, there is a silver lining in that the Cheech opened in between that time, which provided such a lightning rod of activity in downtown Riverside and really gave us a grounding for the location of this conference. So I'm thrilled with the programming that is going to happen in the next 3 days. We're going to have just a wide variety of topics, from legal to design to environmental, et cetera. It's as multidisciplinary a program as planning is itself. So it really is a microcosm of the kind of work we do. So my opening this morning went pretty well. I was thrilled with the mayor's remarks, Mayor of Riverside, as well as the conversation with Cheech. And he really had some very profound things, I think, to say. I look forward to reflecting back on his words, because there is connectivity between the words he was speaking and the work that we do or aspire to do. So I'm looking forward to the next 3 days, but I'm also thrilled to see what happened on day one with Student Day, with having Angela Brooks here from Chicago for a couple of days, and just having the students activated so with such energy and bringing that to this conference. So I think in closing, what the planning profession needed was this kind of conference to kickstart the next era of our conferences. Next year it's going to be in Monterey, and we are excited and setting up shop for the 2025 conference. And even though my term as president will be done by the end of this year, our new president will take the baton and run with it. So I'm thrilled about the programming, and I'm hoping that people enjoy it as much as I did reviewing all the proposals. So thank you.
Thank you. And I would love to ask you just really quickly before we get into the episode, the theme of the conference, Cultivating mm-hmm. Our Future, mm-hmm. what was kind of the inspiration for that? And was it related to it being in Riverside and the mm-hmm. Inland Empire? Is that like a big factor in that?
It was, and it was the local conference host committee that came up with the theme, bringing into account many of the different facets that create the tapestry that is the Inland Empire and its diversity, from agriculture to wind farms and alternative sustainable energy and development and alternative mobility means. It's all in the Inland Empire, and every conference where we have it in a different location, obviously, every year, it's really the theme that starts kick-starting the programmatic pieces. It starts getting people thinking, okay, what kind of sessions can I propose? And sure enough, the sessions and the programming is really spot on in terms of how Cultivating Our Future can speak the language of the Inland Empire in 2024.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. It's Sam and Nat here at the 2024 APA California State Conference. We are actually joined by three very special guests today in person, and we're going to be recording a very special episode for you. So today we have Cassie Vickers, George Velarde, and Angeline Mendoza. And I'm going to kick it over to Sam to further the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here with us. We would love if you could each introduce yourselves and share a bit about your background in urban planning. We'll go in order of how we have it written down. So Cassie, if you could kick us off.
Yeah, so my name is Cassie. I just graduated with my master's in urban planning from Cal State Northridge. And before that, I had gotten my bachelor's in political science at Cal State Fullerton. A little bit about my background in planning. So I was always interested in government, but I wasn't necessarily sure what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I wanted to teach government or if I wanted to become a lawyer like my dad was. And so I just did some political internships and stuff, and I ended up taking an environmental policy course my second year in college. And it's funny because the only reason I signed up for this class was because it was just the most convenient time. And I was like, oh, okay, this will be a cool class, but like I can sleep in. So I signed up for the class, and then they did a unit on urban planning, and I was like, oh, this is like super cool. But they didn't talk about like the jobs. I didn't know you can actually be an urban planner. So I continued in government, worked in the state legislature for a bit, and I just decided like party politics just wasn't for me. I just didn't really wanted to continue down that route. And so then I decided to get my master's in planning. And so here I am today.
Awesome. George?
Hey, good morning. So I'm sure many of the folks can relate, but for me, at least, planning was an accident. It was never really part of the plan. This being here, kind of sitting down with all you guys in a lot of ways was an accident. Quick background, I similarly have a bachelor's degree in political science and sociology. And at the time, similarly, the plan was law school or even an officer candidate school and failed attempts at an ROTC program, which was a quick foreshadowing of how this all unfolded. Coming from a military family background, dad being in the Air Force, sister being in the Coast Guard, there was a lot of influence for public service, whatever that meant, right? Fast forward, dad a retired school administrator, mom is a RN for a school district, and being the youngest of three, with sisters also in city government, there was that push to kind of go that route and kind of get your foot in the door at city government. One thing led to another, and we got a MPA, or Master's in Public Administration. Part of the MPA program was you needed an internship or public sector experience. So I figured organizations can't turn down free help. And I called a number of cities and organizations within the vicinity of where I live. And the city of Fontana happened to be the first place to answer the phone call. And they said, you're going to be in the planning department. And I said, cool, what's that? Planning wedding events, things like that. And boy, I quickly learned how wrong I was. And another quick story, I remember they asked me at the time what a setback was, and my response was something that hinders progress. And I love that answer because there's a lot of innocence behind it. Mm-hmm. And metaphorically speaking, there's still some truth behind it. Mm-hmm. But for those that are listening and for us here, a setback in planning terms is the distance between a structure to a property line, ensuring that there's some space and a buffer between the two. But ultimately, that's how we got our foot in the door, and that's where we're at now.
That was great. And I also think that so many people can kind of relate to that storyline. Sam and I talk about that so much, is like a lot of people fall into planning, but also like in another way kind of fall in love with planning. So I think that that's very relatable for a lot of listeners. And also coming from a sociology background is really cool because we did actually have a few listeners, and then one individual who came up to us like after our session yesterday and was like, hey, you know, I come from a sociology background, but I am interested. They did a minor in urban planning and they were kind of nervous about having like a sociology background. So I think it's kind of nice if they're listening, like, you know, it's just relatable that you can come from so many diverse backgrounds and come into planning with such unique perspectives. So I really appreciate that. And then Angeline, I want to give it to you to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Angeline Mendoza. I am the assistant planner at San Bernardino, City of San Bernardino. And I came actually from the private sector before here. I worked with a private firm doing alcohol licensing, be it on the state level or the city level, or sometimes county with unincorporated areas. And I, much like everyone here, fell into planning. I think maybe a month before grad apps were due, I had all these like big dreams of going. So I was doing anthropology for my bachelor's with a double major in French. And by then I was like 8 years into French. I was looking at other Francophone countries, gonna do my PhD there. I was looking at a program in Andorra that I was really jazzed about. And then a month before grad apps were due, I saw the term urban ecology within my anthropology studies. And so I started looking more into it, and that's how I found urban planning. So all of that, all those dreams of, you know, doing a PhD, being Indiana Jones, I went, nope, and went the other way. grad school was a blast, but now I'm very firm in that I want to do urban planning for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I went in as a dual degree with public policy, mm-hmm. And I didn't jive as well with that. And then as soon as I took my first urban planning classes, I fell in love. Mm-hmm. And just something just settled in me. And I was like, this feels right.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of, yeah, just a lot of people feel very similarly like that. I was a public policy major as well. So I know that... in my undergrad, I think it was just kind of me realizing that I didn't want to write policy. I didn't want to teach policy. I didn't really want to get involved in like too much of like direct politics. And so urban planning, I think, was a more kind of tangible, you know, foot on the ground, direct approach to a lot of issues that people are facing. And we use kind of policy to kind of shape the built environment in a lot of ways. And so I think that's really, really interesting. We want to ask you guys kind of the roles that you're currently in, and you already told us how you got started in planning, but I think we would be curious, based on your current role that you're in now, how did you get there? Why have you chosen to stay? You know, we're just kind of interested in that, in the current position that you guys are all in. So again, we'll just start with you, Cassie. And
yeah, I currently I work in economic development at the local level, and kind of how I found that role is I was working at the state legislature, and I stopped working there my first semester of grad school, and I was just really trying to find like a planning or an economic development like internship or some sort of role. So I stumbled across the one that I have now, and so I've been there about a year and a half now. I really like the team. I think everyone's great, and I've learned a lot and stuff like that.
Okay. I'll ask you one more question about, so in urban planning, what a lot of people realize is that like there are so many different avenues that you can go into a career in mm-hmm. urban planning. You can do economic development, housing, transportation, doesn't, you know, it's all different. I'm curious why you chose economic development as your kind of planning path and not maybe transportation or housing.
Yeah. So I thought economic development was interesting because you're working on like, you're not like a physical planner per se,
right?
But you're really working on bringing up the workforce and the job market like in your community or mm-hmm. jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of what my office does is we'll have our coordinators go out and do site visits, or they'll go to conferences and they'll meet with developers and try to get like bigger businesses mm-hmm. to our jurisdiction. So I think all that stuff is really interesting. And there's also so many different facets of economic development that mm-hmm. I didn't realize. Like we do film permitting, which I didn't mm-hmm. even know was like something that we would even do.
Yeah.
And so that's cool, like working with the productions and stuff like that. So yeah, I just think economic development really like helps shape the community. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I chose that path.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was also surprised when I found out that the IE is like very big on film development and just kind of pursuing that kind of avenue of economic development. Very, very cool. And so I want to pass it over to George. You can share with us how you are currently in your role and how you got there. I'm excited to say.
Well, thank you. So my current role as an associate planner with the city is primarily processing entitlement applications. Mm-hmm. Other things, to continue to be a listener to our staff, not only the people on the other side of the table, but on our side as well, in whatever capacity that might mean as a planner, whether that's working on our general plan update or to help in any way with succession planning. I feel that's very important to me and I hold that close to my chest. I feel that is my main role.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. And then Angeline?
Yes, so I am the assistant planner at the City of San Bernardino with George. And previously, I was in the private firm and I wanted to move into the public sector. And it was a pretty huge jump for me, both in terms of the projects that we're handling now. So like George said, you know, we're processing entitlements. And previously, at my previous work, it was just localized to alcohol entitlements. And so no ground up developments, nothing of the sort. It was just all shell buildings or just not within our purview. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a huge learning curve for me. And the entire time I was in the private firm, there are a bunch of reasons why I wanted to get into the public sector. So grad school is incredibly expensive, and luckily, when it comes to working with a nonprofit or a government organization, there are options for some type of loan forgiveness. So that was in part why I wanted to move to the public sector, due to just the unfortunate reality that higher education is inaccessible. Mm-hmm. And in addition to why I wanted to move to the public sector, I felt like I could help people more than just, you know, being contracted by clients. Now it's being able to help them along the way, being able to review their projects, making it more accessible for people, and making government more accessible for the actual applicant or client themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. We had someone in our session yesterday ask us about the differences between private and public, and we both have a little bit of experience in both. And I think just talking about like the you really have like a local perspective when you're in the public sector, and you like get to know communities and like really be embedded in the community. And so I think that, you know, is exactly what you're talking about, and being able to like really help communities, especially when like you've been living there for a while or you're from there. That's definitely something I've thought about in terms of like my career. But we would love to know what brought each of you to the APA California conference this year. We're all really excited to be here, and I'm sure we all have our own reasons for wanting to come. So I think for the sake of order, we'll just continue with Cassie going first here.
So kind of what brought me is I'm actually a part of the APA Young Emerging Planners for the Inland Empire. I'm the current chair for the chapter. And so this whole year we've kind of been preparing for it. So I've been like excited about it all year. And I was just happy that it's here in the Inland Empire because it's local to me and I didn't have to like go super far. So that's kind of what brought me. But I was also just excited to kind of connect with everyone and meet people.
Cool. George?
Yeah. So for a lot of us, similarly, it was in proximity to where we live. Mm-hmm. Myself and a lot of other people can definitely call the Inland Empire home. And what better way to learn and innovate from people and other organizations that are a lot smarter than me and that are dealing with the same concerns. Mm-hmm.
So this is actually my first time at the APA. So during grad school, I couldn't make my way to Fresno. Between going to classes and going to work, I would take the public transportation for both of them. And so time-wise, money-wise, it just wasn't feasible. Mm-hmm. So this entire time, I've been like a kid in a candy shop, just not knowing where to focus first. And so now that it's in Riverside, like George mentioned, with proximity, that's how I got here.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I think that there's a lot of really interesting crossover from our previous session yesterday, where a lot of people were bringing up their focus or interest in how we kind of bridge the gap between collaboration when it comes to like state, local jurisdictions, federal government, you know, whatever the case may be. And I think it really is like conferences like this that help with collaboration efforts. And I feel like the IE, especially as someone who's lived here my whole life, is very underrepresented. And so I'm really happy that the conference happened here this year, where there's just a lot more collaboration that I'm seeing among different groups. And it's very interesting because like you do have people from, you know, Los Angeles, San Diego, Northern California, and they're all kind of here. They get to see like a place like Riverside and realize that the IE is, you know, a growing place. So I think that's really great that we're all here and we can all kind of collaborate with one another. So that was a great point to bring up. I'm curious if there is a particular session or topic that kind of resonates with each of you the most. Now I know that we're only in the second day, but from yesterday's kind of sessions, was there, you know, any particular session that you were really interested in, or in future sessions that are going to be offered in this upcoming week, is there any that you're really looking forward to?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed your guys' session. I thought it was cool to just kind of have like an open conversation.
Guys, she was not paid to say this.
Get to catch later in the day was, it was kind of like a round table the way they set it up, and it was basically just people who have been seasoned professionals giving advice to students and people that are currently looking for jobs. So they were really just really giving good advice. They're like, okay, this is what you need to say in interviews. If like you ever need help with a resume, this is what you need to do. Just stuff like that. And I think just hearing that from people who are actually interviewing for positions and they've sat through tons of interviews at this point, I think that really helps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. George?
Yeah, so two in particular. One was scheduled for tomorrow, but unfortunately it was canceled, but that has to do with electric vehicle charging and how cities and other local agencies are supposed to implement it. Like many Senate and Assembly bills, our roles at this local level is implementation, especially as things like environmental regulation, air quality, all those things are viewed through a microscope. The other session I had the opportunity to go to yesterday was about planning for aging communities. Now, this one hits close to home as someone who spends a lot of time caregiving and one who recently lost grandparents. It was personal. As planners, we're so progressive. We're trying to look at things and forecasting things years in advance. We aren't as mindful for the folks that came before us, or sometimes we get too busy and, you know, sometimes forget. But generally, as planners, when we're looking at plans, we're seeing really boilerplate things, you know, does it meet ADA? And that's kind of it. So things like ADUs or senior living with amenities is a step in the right direction, but we need to continue to push the envelope to allow these people to continue to age gracefully and independently within their own homes and with purpose.
That's really nice. Yeah. Kind of the movement towards aging in place and making communities more accessible for individuals who are entering an age group where, you know, they're having certain mobility issues or there aren't amenities that kind of fit, you know, their needs or desires, I think is really important. And I think it's something that planning departments, firms, cities should be more focused on. So I really like that. The company that I work for, we build affordable housing, and one of our focus groups is senior housing. And we founded something known as like the Senior Arts Colony, where we have like arts programs in all of our senior buildings. And it does help with just kind of like bringing specific amenities that are more exciting for like individuals who are trying to age in place and, you know, the affordability components and all of that. So I think that's so important. I really like that you brought that up. And Angeline, if you just want to, again, address like a particular session or topic that has been resonating with you most here at the conference.
Yes. So I have been talking our entire department's heads off about wildfire planning. It is the main reason why I went to grad school. My topic of focus is wildland urban interfaces and designing the existing built environment instead of radiating outwards. Since these WUIs are created by this kind of outward growth that is unsustainable. And there are a huge number of wildfire planning panels. There are a few individuals from DUDEC who are in wildfire resilience planning. And that is what I want to shift into for, you know, my lifetime in planning. So city planning for now, but wildfire planning, especially with GIS. I also talk everyone's heads off about GIS. So my love for Barry Manilow is rivaled by my love for GIS.
That's so funny. Yeah, GIS. I mean, again, this is like so interesting hearing just how niche like things can get in planning of like, I don't know, the crossover between GIS and urban wildfire planning. How, you know, that's just, yeah, again, I'm sure you're drawing inspiration from someone. Someone heard that and they were like, wildfires? Yeah. So great.
Yeah, thank you all for talking about that. Moving more towards like the Inland Empire in Southern California, are there any planning trends that you're seeing pop up in your communities, in the Inland Empire more broadly, or even in Southern California?
Yeah, so I think for me, I grew up in the high desert. I'm still there, but I do come down to the IE a lot. So I'll go to like workout classes in like Fontana Rancho area. So I see a lot of like housing being built, and some of the communities are, it looks like they're like mixed use and stuff like that, which is really great. I don't know if it's all affordable housing, but I do like to kind of see the mixed use being implemented more. I would like to see that on a broader scale, though, in the IE particularly, and definitely just more affordable housing in general. But yeah, the more mixed use. And then also, a lot of the cities are trying to revive their downtowns, which I'm super happy about. Like, I know where I'm from, we have like this whole downtown revitalization plan. And I think Ontario is doing something similar. So yeah, I think that's always great.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never been to Riverside, but the downtown here is adorable, yeah. And I'm really liking it.
I literally made Sam, I was like, we're going to walk downtown really quickly, like, before each session, because I need to show you places. And I think that, yeah, I'm a diehard fan of Riverside. I missed it so much. So it's really nice. I think that's kind of an asset of a lot of places in the IE that are undervalued in a lot of ways. So that was a great point to bring up. George?
In the Inland Empire, I would say e-commerce and environmental justice. No, just kidding. But housing specifically and electric vehicle charging, those are two areas of topic that most can relate to, where there's requirements by the state to have X number of housing units, X number of charging facilities to really achieve that goal that the state's looking for. So those are, I would say, two really hot topics, at least within the Inland Empire and just the state of California.
Mm-hmm. Really. Angeline?
So like George said, EV charging lots or even EV ready spaces, you see the long lines when it comes to EV charging, and it's something that I've seen the IE kind of shifting towards. And something that is a trend in the IE, but we're trying to shift away from, is warehouses. Mm-hmm. It's become a really hot button topic, and that's something we're seeing change in real time.
I hate warehouse development, and I talked about that yesterday during our session. But yes, the Inland Empire is notorious for that, and we're also known as like the largest trucking route because of the warehouses. So also just the pollutants and emittance, and the fact that there are so many environmental challenges is such a big concern. I think too, the like speaking to just the sensitivity that acknowledging cities are under-resourced and they're using warehouse development to get the tax revenue in order to keep, you know, certain funding open, I think is really important. So then I think it just kind of like it really like should inspire planners to want to find those like alternative solutions. So I am happy that it's a hot button topic, and I'm happy that you mentioned that we're trying to push away from that in the IE, because I think that's so important. I think that's just a great point to bring up. We also are hoping that you can share with our listeners today, how planners are able to continue to innovate and push the profession forward. You three are very young, very vibrant in your kind of professions at this point. And I think that it's extremely important to kind of showcase that there's such opportunity in planning as it continues to grow and evolve. And so, yeah, we're just interested in how we can continue to innovate kind of and push things forward.
Yeah, I think the kind of way to innovate and push things forward is, first, you need to like grow your network and just kind of collaborate with other planners. Mm-hmm. I think it's important because even when I just go to like APA mixers, I'll start talking to someone and they'll like spark an idea in me that I didn't even know was there. And like for me, I really am passionate about kind of what George was mentioning earlier, but planning for those with disabilities or who have some sort of impairment. And I think that's extremely important. And like, even I talked to Jonathan Pacheco Bell the other day, and I was like, oh, I heard your guys' episode on hostile architecture. And I was mentioning how like with disabilities, like that happens a lot.
Yes.
And so even that conversation just kind of sparked an idea. So I think it's collaborating on the ideas you have and just kind of listening to others.
That's great.
Yeah.
George.
Yeah. Two words. Succession planning. 100 years from now, it won't matter what car we drove or having the latest phone, but the impact we leave behind around those we love is the thing that will remain. Whether that's through the built-out community that we help establish through proper and ethical zoning, or bringing the next group of leaders up, our job in moving things forward is remembering the positive impact we can help shape.
Absolutely.
That was like poetic.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was, I love that. I really do think that making sure that what you're leaving behind is kind of better than how you found it. That's like a really big, you know, just ultra famous quote, but I think it's really important in planning to make sure that you are always mindful and intentional about the work that you're doing. So I really appreciate that sentiment. Angeline?
Gotcha. Well, that was very poetic.
Yeah, and hard to follow up, isn't it?
So I actually did have some trouble with this question at the risk of sounding really bright-eyed and young. For me, my mind immediately gravitates towards personally as a planner not becoming jaded. Mm. And that's someone who is very early on in their career, especially with city planning in general, with all the red tape. I know one of the things that was mentioned earlier on was just the bureaucracy of everything, and seeing moments of improvement that could be made either in the general plan or even just how we handle projects. You know, building relationships with our planning commissions and the city council, which can be difficult. As someone who came from the private sector, going to hearings with different planning commissions and representing clients, like, I see firsthand how planning commissions can be, and how they shouldn't be, in that same line of thought. So building those relationships with the authoritative bodies that we're working with.
I think that's so important. I think there's a lot of sentiments kind of across the board that each of you shared that I think really kind of cross over with one another. There's a lot of intersection, even if, you know, you don't think about it. But one big kind of thing that I often think about is the challenges with bureaucracy and government. It's actually one of the main reasons why I left government and went into the private sector, is because there is often kind of this like waiting period that happens in government agencies that drives you kind of crazy, because you just want to be able to witness this immediate change, and that doesn't always happen. But then there's this other part of me that kind of thinks about like leaving things better than how you found them. And it's almost like just making sure that you're doing as much as you possibly can to almost change the narrative or like flip that attitude where you're working, especially in government, I think can be so important. And I think what you kind of spoke to about not being jaded is so important, because I think that's really how a lot of planners feel. And I think that it might be really nice for individuals to kind of hear that, because it is so easy to get bogged down in your frustration for things to happen faster. But I think there has to be almost this like patience that you have in understanding that things have been done the way that they've been done for so long. And it really is you, if you can stick it out and really like push forward, that can kind of make those changes. And I kind of think about that sometimes, and like, instead of deciding to like leave the sector, maybe we stay and like we try to really push forward for change, because I think that that's where it happens from the ground up. So I just, yeah, I appreciate everyone's sentiments in that regard, because I think it's just, it's all, they're all very important pieces.
I will say my experience coming from the private sector, mm-hmm. going into public sector, and being at the behest of that bureaucracy and, like you said, those waiting times, mm-hmm. has definitely informed how I approach projects now as a city planner. So having more of a sense of urgency just for myself,
yeah,
and to be able to serve these clients despite any frustrations. In the end, you know, I was there as them merely months ago. And so that has definitely informed the beginning of my planning career and how I handle things.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think George like brought up implementation, yeah. And I think like working in transportation planning, like we spend all this time and money on like these mobility plans and like safety plans. And then sometimes you don't ever see some of these things implemented, and it can get really frustrating. Mm-hmm. Even in like the consulting space, mm-hmm. it's like we're, you know, serving our clients, which are cities and other jurisdictions. And then it can be frustrating. It's like, can you put the bike lane in?
Yeah.
This bike lane, yeah. It has been planned. Like, let's put it in. And I think I also need to remind myself that like a lot of times cities don't have like a lot of resources to, yeah. like make these things happen, or there's like a lot of red tape and I
or think, like community pushback
or
such, yeah, a big
political
issue.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so yeah, it's like even just trying to be like, okay, I'm doing my job, mm-hmm. like yes, sometimes things don't get implemented as quickly as we would hope, but like we have to keep fighting the good fight, trying to make these things happen.
Yeah.
Working with cities, not against them.
Exactly.
You know, that, yeah. So yeah. Definitely relate to that.
Real quick, planning is a constant reminder of an exercise in patience.
Yeah.
To your point, there's regulations and all the stuff that we have to do, mm-hmm. in that setting. Whereas on the private side, you know, time is money. So there's always that balance, yeah. and we're always exercising delayed gratification. You don't, yeah. see a project actually be built, you know, months, many years after it was approved. So that's just a reminder.
Yeah.
For those listening.
No, it is. Absolutely. I think that is one thing to be extremely mindful of that I try, because I do think that when you're coming, everybody comes from a place of good intention. But I do think that sometimes when people get really frustrated with like, why are cities making certain decisions, or why are cities doing this versus this? There are, because, you know, you're dealing with state and federal regulations that you're tied to. You're dealing with a community opposition group, or you're dealing with the community in general at large. You're dealing with organizations that hold a lot of power in communities that kind of, you know, tie you to whether or not you're going to receive funding to make certain decisions. So I think that that's extremely important. Okay. So as we are kind of wrapping up the episode for today, we have one kind of final question for you guys. And we are hoping that you can give our listeners one piece of advice that you would give to someone attending the APA conference for the first time. Now, there might be some listeners who are hearing this while they're attending this conference, or there might be some listeners who are really excited to attend a future APA conference. I think they can benefit from any advice that you would give. So Cassie, what's your one piece of advice?
Yeah. So I actually attended the Anaheim one a few years ago, and it was my first time, and I just remember being so nervous. So if I could tell myself 2 years ago, I think it would just be, when you're talking to someone, just kind of like don't let like their fancy title intimidate you. I know as a student or young professional, that's hard. Mm-hmm. And you might feel like you don't have much to offer in the conversation. And then something my mom always told me growing up is you have more in common with other people than you think. Mm-hmm. So you just got to make a connection and like talk to them and you'll find out that you actually have more in common. Not too long ago at an APA event, I found out that one of the people there was actually my neighbor and lives on my street. So yeah, I think that's just an example of like just getting to know people and you can build great like professional connections.
That's great. Love that answer. George?
Yeah, so whether it's the conference for the first time or stepping into the planning or public servant setting, things I would recommend from one human being to another would be to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. Remove your own biases and try to minimize self-interest. Service above self. And I'm a real quotes person, and one of my favorites is from Martin Luther King, who once said, "Not everyone can be famous, but everyone can be great, because greatness is determined by service." And I love this because I think he got it right. Not only are our lives fulfilled, but the lives of the people we love are fulfilled when we have purpose-driven mm-hmm. service.
It's wonderful. Angeline?
Yes, mine is ask questions, mm-hmm. either here at the conference of the people attending, the speakers, or even in the workplace, or especially in the workplace, actually, because no one knows everything. Mm-hmm. Anyone who says that they know everything does not. And I bring that up in a way to hopefully deconstruct the stigma around being curious. Mm-hmm. Or being wrong. Mm-hmm. And I, at least for me personally, that helped me back. That still holds me back.
Yeah.
So it's a nice reminder.
Yeah. That was actually one thing for Sam and I when we had our session yesterday. It was like a live Q&A session and we wanted to really open the floor up. But Sam and I were really nervous. We were like, are people going to ask questions or are they going to be nervous? And I think we were both really impressed by the amount of questions we received. People were not afraid, you know, hands shot up. They were really eager to kind of have their questions answered. And I really respect that because I am someone that has a really hard time sometimes asking questions. But I just think that it is so important. It helps you grow. It helps you gain new perspective. So I really appreciate that sentiment. And Madam President, what's your one piece of advice, especially as someone who is so heavily involved in the conference organization?
Yeah, well, I have to say all the answers I heard here were pretty much the things I was going to say, so thank you. I would have to say I still remember my first conference. And yes, all of the nerves were there, all of the anxiety was there. But planners are both a curious and inquisitive lot, mm-hmm. But they're also personable. Mm-hmm. And asking questions, getting to know people is a great way of networking. Mm-hmm. It is the ground level networking. We have this buddy program going on here that has been really successful. And that's a construct, but it does pair people together mm-hmm. and start that relationship going. And just don't ever think that you don't have anything to bring to the table if you're just starting out. The people that have had more seasoning always learn from people that are starting. So I learn all the time from those that are just coming in. Mm-hmm. And giving that person a voice and raising that voice can really enhance our profession entirely. So everything you guys said was true. And I would just offer, absorb the experience and enjoy it because there's going to be another one next year mm-hmm. and you'll learn from the first one you attend and you'll have a new network the following year.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Great pieces of advice from everyone. And I really want to thank all of you. Sam and I both want to thank all of you guys for being here today, sitting down with us to have this conversation. I think it's extremely important to uplift voices in planning. And Sam and I are really happy that we got to do that at this year's conference. So we not only want to thank you guys for attending, but we want to thank the APA for allowing us this opportunity to sit down and actually have these conversations, which are so important. So thank you all.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Urban Planning is Not Boring. If you did, please remember to send us to your friends and follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, guys, urban planning is not boring.
No, it is not.